From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Araspeña with your state and local news update. It's back to school at Saik Gastineau Community School in Douglas for a group of 18 students whose families chose to have their kids return to in-person classes. While those families are relieved to return to something that resembles normalcy, others decided to keep their kids at home. I spoke to some of those families for this story. Jamie Framke and her son Max walk through the front doors of Saik Gastineau Community School. They pose for a photo in front of a banner of a form-line drawing of an eagle, the school's mascot. It's Max's first day of kindergarten. Framke and Max walked into the cafeteria where school staff and kids were gathering to eat and being serenaded by a guitar player. Framke says she understands the risks of sending Max to school.
As his mom, it's my choice if he can be exposed or not to anything. We're really big on hand washing and sanitizer, and I've taught them about all of that.
Framke works in healthcare. She says it's a relief to return to something that resembles normal life. Saik principal Stacy Juve says this week is the beginning of the end of a challenging time for students and their families.
We are looking forward to being able to connect with students who are back in person, to assess them, to sort of see what skills they've gained during their time away from us or time via distance, and what gaps we can begin to fill academically.
Devon Francis is another parent who chose to have his son Gregory start school in person. He says face-to-face time is important for his child's learning development.
Sometimes, even with the distance learning, they don't understand clearly what sometimes the teachers are trying to say to them. And then participation then in class, they can participate more. You know, teachers can see them, how they operate, and all of that sort of stuff. And their weaknesses can be easily realized, you know, and build upon.
Some parents aren't ready to send their kids back to school yet. Sanjay Piare has a fifth grader and a third grader who would normally be attending classes at Saik.
They gave us the option. We said, why are we going to roll the dice when, you know, there's some upsides to, as arduous as it is for everybody, like hanging out with our kids and keeping them home and
Piare says he understands the reasons the other families chose to go with face-to-face classes, especially for kids' emotional health. But his kids seem to be doing okay so far.
They're resilient. Like, they're just brought up. maybe it's the technology. Maybe it's this is what they have, and they're rolling with it.
The Juneau School District reports about 1,200 or one-third of students have returned to face-to-face classes this week. The other two-thirds are still doing distance learning. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Araspeña. In other news, Yakutat's police force has updated guidelines for how and when its officers use force. As KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, the new policy restricts chokeholds and emphasizes de-escalating potentially violent confrontations.
The Yakutat Police Department's updated policy defines chokeholds as deadly force, and it instructs officers to give a verbal warning before using force that could injure someone. If they don't, they are required to document why they didn't. These guidelines are part of a new, publicly available police operations manual that hadn't been updated since 2007. Use of force policies have only recently received public scrutiny after police departments across the nation began publishing them.
I don't think in policing we can and maybe should never have had these secret.
That's Yakutat Police Chief Jim Capra. He took charge of the department in November, having come from the National Park Service, where he'd worked as a law enforcement ranger. And he says he welcomes more transparency for the local department. The document is still in draft form. It's awaiting the city manager's and Capra's signatures and an audit by an independent agency. Use of force techniques like chokeholds have come under scrutiny in response to police killings of people of color, including the death of George Floyd last May in Minneapolis. But Capra says the updated policy isn't just the product of the national conversation about high-profile deaths at the hands of law enforcement. President Donald Trump signed an executive order last June that makes some Department of Justice grants contingent on following specific guidelines.
The executive order gives us until the end of January to to get this done, or we would lose any chance at any federal funding grants that might come up.
The policy changes also promote the use of de-escalation techniques, tell officers to seek medical care when needed, and require them to terminate force as soon as a person is compliant. Capra says all of those were already part of officers' academy training. Yakutat's police department isn't the only Alaska agency taking a look at how they employ force. Capra says he talked to several departments that hadn't updated their policies for years.
I think it forced every department in the state to look at it.
The updated policy still authorizes the use of deadly force to stop arson, sexual assault, and robbery, which previous reporting by Coast Alaska identified as unusual among Southeast Alaska police departments. Capra says he's going to take a second look at the policy, but in all cases, the use of deadly force is still governed by standards set by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Or they could make that decision to use deadly force, or force that could reasonably be assumed to be lethal to somebody. It would have to be to prevent death or serious injury to yourself or somebody else.
The use of force policy isn't the final arbiter of whether force was justified. State attorneys also review the circumstances of every death at the hands of police, though criminal prosecutions of police officers are virtually unheard of in the state. The state legislature is also taking a look at regulating use of force. A pre-filed bill in the Alaska State Senate would outlaw the use of chokeholds unless deadly force is warranted. So far, Capra says he's received little public feedback in response to the changes. He says use of force reports in Yakutat are rare. He doesn't know of any incidents since he started as chief more than 2 months ago. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
Because of COVID-19, this year's free legal clinic for Alaskans will be done differently, and it will likely tackle issues related to the pandemic. The MLK Free Legal Help Day event on Monday is organized for low or moderate income Alaskans who cannot afford to hire lawyers.
Volunteer service, while it's important year-round, as a nation, we come together on MLK Day as a day on, not a day off.
That's Krista Scully, pro bono director with the Alaska Bar Association. In the last 11 years, lawyers might answer questions in person at the local courthouse. Not this year. Scully says this time they are using a statewide call center. Volunteer lawyers will answer calls about civil issues like family law, public assistance, employment law, probate, estate planning, and landlord-tenant issues. They may also refer people to another agency that can better help them with their problem.
What tends to be one of the most difficult issues are for people to just navigate a system that they're not familiar with. And lawyers are so well suited for listening and then untangling what it looks like to move forward on something that feels incredibly overwhelming to a person.
Ben Hoffmeister, president of the Alaska Bar Association, expects to hear from Alaskans who can't pay their rent because they lost their job during the pandemic.
I would imagine this year there's going to be a lot of questions about housing. That'll probably be a big issue given what's been going on with evictions and eviction moratoriums over the last year.
The MLK Free Legal Help Day runs from noon to 4 p.m. on Monday. The call center number is 844-263-1849. Scully says they'll have a limited number of volunteer lawyers standing by, and she asks Alaskans to be patient when dialing in. Volunteers won't be able to answer any questions about criminal cases. In addition to Monday's clinic, there's a virtual legal clinic in which any Alaskan can log in and ask volunteer lawyers questions about civil issues. That's at alaska.freelegalanswers.org. Scully says the website will stay up all year round. Once again, that phone number for Monday afternoon's legal clinic is 844-263-1849. The year-round website is alaska.freelegalanswers.org. And the University of Alaska Board of Regents has extended the contract for its interim president. The board last summer announced that Pat Pitney would take over as interim president August 1st and stay at least a year in the position and up to 18 months. On Friday, the board announced a search for a permanent president would not begin until spring 2022 and that Pitney would remain as interim president until the permanent position is filled. The board, in making the announcement, cited in part funding uncertainties for the university system and a desire for stability. You're listening to KTOO News 104.3 FM in Juneau.